Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
WDEV presents House Calls Vermont. Hosts Jim Bradley and Chris West share their knowledge and expertise on topics specific to the opportunities and challenges of building and renovating in Vermont. Our program brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive, Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, Painting and Custom Wood Finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com. RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basement-y. NorthernNEFoundations.com. Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association online, homebuildersvt.com. Poly Construction in South Burlington, one call does it all, online at polyconstruction.com. Your participation today is encouraged. Call the listener line with questions at 802-244-1777 or toll free 877-291-8255. Now, House Calls Vermont with Jim and Chris.
Hello, everybody. This is Jim Bradley, and I'm here with my colleague and friend, Chris West.
How's it going, guys?
We welcome you today as listeners to House Calls Vermont, and returning listeners, thank you for coming back as well. Outside, we got a little bit of white stuff coming down, snow that is.
Freezing rain or moving in and out of each.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know when you're listening to this. Hopefully it's live. And if it is, you're going to find out that next week we have this really strange phenomenon going to be happening. They call it a polar vortex. But I think about 10 years ago, we used to call that winter. And so we're going to have winter next week, everybody.
Really cold winter.
Exactly. So, but with that, that makes our topic that much more germane today because it's about insulation.
Part two.
You say, well, you're on this again? Well, basically, there's just so much to talk about. We're not trying to exhaust the subject, but at the same time, we want to make sure we check all the boxes at the same time. Because so many of you are doing projects on your own, and the tried and true type of insulation that most people would default towards, which Chris had titled this show last week, Put the Pink Down, because most people will go for simplicity. They'll just go down to your local store, buy whatever you can of the pink stuff, take it back to the house, push it into the cavities, make sure it fits as much as possible, and overstuff it at times, and then they don't get the performance they're looking for. So with that, what we're trying to do is make you aware of, one, what type of insulation to choose. Should you choose fiberglass? Could it work well? And if it's going to, how do you ensure that's going to happen? But at the same time, what are some of the other options out there? And this is all assembly specific. When I say assembly, I mean like a wall assembly, an attic assembly, a basement assembly. The house is a system assembly. You have to give thought to what you're going to use, and you also have to look at these types of insulations, because some of the insulations that are out there, they're trying to solve one problem by taking some of the toxins out, but unfortunately, some of the insulation is introducing other toxins, or somebody with a sensitivity might have that triggered, and they're going to possibly have a situation where that could be problematic for them. So with that, we just want to make sure you're getting an overview of each type, and I will say once again, as my colleague says here, Chris, whatever you're doing with the assembly, no matter what type of insulation you're putting in, make sure that assembly can dry.
Vapor open.
Exactly. Because if you put a bunch of, insulation in there, that's going to allow for vapor diffusion to happen, where inside vapor gets into the wall system during this time of year and it gets trapped, or it ices and then it starts to get the insulation wet. You're going to have a failed assembly from a health and safety standpoint, structural durability standpoint. But once insulation gets wet, it changes Dr. Heckle, Mr. High, because an insulator turns into a conductor. That means it promotes the heat loss or the cold intrusion, and it's not going to perform well.
And we know that. I mean, if you've ever gone outside in the winter and done some exercising and you've got a sweater on and a windbreaker, and after an hour of working real hard, you're warm, but your insulation, that sweater, is completely wet because you're creating moisture that's going into that, and it's nowhere to dry because you have that outside layer to keep the freezing rain or the wet snow off of you. That's exactly the same thing that's happening in your house.
Exactly. So with this, what we got to last week, only the first two items of the multiple sections last
14
week.
14 pages.
Yes. Well, it's just because you've been in this as long as we have, and you realize there's just so much there to consider. But
well, we're still on fluffy.
Well,
right?
Fluffy, yeah, exactly. We're on the fluffy type of insulation. Chris got into last week. The fiberglass?
We talked about fiberglass.
The rock wool?
Talked about rock wool.
But we didn't get to cellulose, really.
Dun, 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 dun.
Exactly. So back in the day, back in the 70s, there used to be this wonderful show on called Puffin' Stuff.
Well, H.R. Puffin' Stuff.
H.R. Puffin' Stuff. And so if you go on YouTube, you can still see them, and you wonder, what were they smoking?
Witchy poo.
Exactly. Right, right. Exactly. But with this, we're calling this fluff not stuff, as far as the fluffy stuff goes. Because when you do this, when you put this type of fibrous type of material, the way that it's going to work is the fibers inside the material are going to have air capturing capability. So they're going to halt the air movement as much as possible, or trap the warm air molecules. If wind is blowing through it, because you don't have proper air sealing, or you've left part of the insulation exposed, wind will blow by it, and this is called wind washing, and it'll pull that insulation or that the thermal components away, or the ability to actually insulate. It pulls that away, just like it getting wet. But you don't want to allow that to happen, excuse me. And so with that, the other type of insulation that we didn't get to last week was cellulose. Now, cellulose is a great product.
I just want to point out the other fluffy insulation. We've got a whole bunch of rigid coming.
Exactly. So with the cellulose, it is recycled newsprint. Interesting fact is that as our newspaper industry is declining, magazine industry, whatever, and the print industry is declining, it's going more digital, there's less of a supply of this surplus material. And so they might end up having to actually make the newsprint to continue to produce the actual amount of cellulose that would be demanded for the market. But with that, what they do is they chop up the newsprint. Usually they're going to add a product called boric acid, which sounds scary, but really, you know, you use it to drive insects away. There are some medical treatments. As you go in the emergency room, they'll actually use it to flush the eyes out. So it's not necessarily caustic to humans. You don't want to ingest it necessarily, but it is something that's pretty much innocuous inside the house. And so that can be used in a couple different fashions. You know, granted, it is a hygroscopic material. That means if it's in a wet environment, it will start to draw that moisture into it. So you want to make sure you're dealing with the moisture again and you're allowing for it to dry. If you have insulation in your attic that is cellulose, you may find that if you've had a lot of moisture up there, the top layer may cake over because it's actually been, you know, transforming or changing the composition of it because of excessive moisture. So that's a good indicator there. But basically, you can put it loose fill into attics after you air seal. You can put it into wall systems, but not loose fill. I know you can go down to a lot of the hardware stores or big box stores, and they'll let you check out one of their insulation machines.
A blower.
Yep. If you actually go ahead and buy enough of their product, they'll let you use that so you can go ahead and insulate the attic. Now, with that, some people try to insulate walls. Now, you can fill the cavity with the insulation, but unfortunately, it will settle over time. And back when they first started doing this back in the 80s, and I think maybe some even a little earlier than that, they were using loose-fill machines, and they would fill the cavity, but over time it settles. And so you get this weird anomaly at the top of the cavities that doesn't perform well.
We have some very interesting infrared images from some houses that had dense pack exterior walls. And when we look at them on a cold day with the infrared camera, it looked like one of those old stereo equalizers where each bay has a different height of insulation in them because it's all settled at different rates.
Yes. And so with that, you want to be sure that if you're going to fill an area, that you're doing it in the right place with the right type of machine. And, you know, that's something if you do it in your attic, you could probably do it yourself.
Yep.
But if you're going to dense pack a wall system, you really want to get a professional to do that. And after spending time in an attic, as some of our customers that are DIY-oriented have said, I don't want to ever do this
again.
I'd
rather hire someone to do this. Yeah, absolutely. So when we're talking about dense packing, there's a standard at which it's dense packed to, and the R values change depending on how densely packed it is. So we usually talk about 3.5 pounds per cubic foot up to 4 pounds per cubic foot, and that's the density that we want to be dense packing our walls to. And that has to be netted. You can't just have a completely open wall and throw insulation in there. You have to have something to dense pack against. I did want to talk about the plus sides of cellulose. Cellulose is an environmentally friendly insulation. This is recycled cardboard and newspapers and books and all types of other types of things. You can have it blown in loose, like Jim was saying, dense pack. There's also something called wet applied cellulose, where they add water to that, and that water then allows you to kind of throw it against the walls, and it sticks in a way that it doesn't otherwise, if it's not wet. The downside to that, of course, is that you have a huge amount of moisture you're adding to it, and then you have to bring in like a commercial dehumidifier.
And that's one of the big problems in our industry, is that you're usually on this time crunch as far as schedule is concerned. You know, one thing sequences after the other. So go ahead, get all the framing up, and then, hey, get the electrical in there and get the plumbing in there. And, hey, you better get it insulated and then covered up with sheetrock, not allowing for proper drying potential. I know out in Seattle, Washington, one of the requirements is that the inspectors come in and actually test the moisture content of the assembly so they're not trapping moisture in. And so when you're introducing moisture with wet-packed cellulose, you really run the risk of mold if you're not allowing it to dry appropriately. Even with conventional framing, if you're not careful, what you can do is, like, you spray foam the cavity, but you still have a higher moisture content in the studs, like above 15 or 19%, then what can happen is, as it starts to dry out, it shrinks and it creates voids between the actual foam and the framing members. So that's a danger too. Yep. On the other side, as Chris was saying, we have seen some people try to use the wet pack cellulose, not in the cavity of a wall system or something like that, but they will use it against stone foundations.
Oh my gosh. That brings us, we saw this 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Where not to use fluffy. Never
exactly.
Put fluffy in. Insulation, whether it's rock wool, even though they say it's water, it's not going to absorb water, even with fiberglass or cellulose, never put those in contact with the ground or in contact with a basement wall without some kind of barrier between them, because this stuff will just absorb it, and it is the organic food that mold and mildew and wood rot are happy to be eating.
Yep. And just one last thing on cellulose real quick is the fact that the boric acid is not just an insect inhibitor, but it also is a fire retardant.
Yep.
So when you have it in assembly and you have that component in there, it's going to keep it from catching on fire. Because someone said you
it reduces the chance of it catching
exactly.
on fire.
Exactly.
Because it will catch on fire.
Exactly.
You know, and funny enough, concrete will burn as a fuel at a certain temperature.
Yep.
It is like 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit before it does that. But that is something that happens. Okay, we were talking about cellulose in particular, and there were two things that I wanted to bring up about cellulose that is important. One is that cellulose is a carbon sink, which means that if you use it in your house as insulation, you're actually not throwing it out to rot in a dump somewhere,
yeah.
And that carbon dioxide is not going back into the atmosphere. So it is a carbon sink. And the other is it can be used for what's called as hygric buffering. Hygric buffering is the ability of a material to absorb some water and then later release it without changing the ability of the insulation to work. So if we're going to, when we're building these 12-inch, sometimes 16-inch thick walls
sure.
for these super insulated houses, we make sure that the vapor can move in and out on both sides, and that allows for moisture to move in but back out, and that's part of how it works. Hygric buffering, we call that.
Excellent. At this point in time, we do have a call on our line. We got Brian in Woodbury. Brian, go ahead with your question today. Well, we thought we had Brian in Woodbury. Brian, are you there?
And now our... Okay.
I'm
so,
here. Hello?
No, we lost. We're having some technical problems again with our sound here. So, Brian, if you could just hold on for a minute, and hopefully we can get that back. If not, if these technical issues keep happening, we'll ask you to send an email to housecallsvt@gmail.com so that we can deal with your question, and hopefully we can get these technical issues worked out. So that was Fluffy. What's fluffy. After fluffy?
Rigid.
Rigid.
And no, we're not talking about the Home Depot brand or the plumbing brand of tools.
No.
We're talking about rigid board insulation.
Which is obviously different from fluffy because rigid, if you try to bend it, it'll break. So that's why we call it rigid. So what are the types of rigid insulation that we have to talk about here?
Well, one of the most ubiquitous or popular type had been like an XPS. XPS is expanded or extruded polystyrene. And basically that was going to be your blue, your pink, your green board that you'd find at some of the other stores. And that was a type of insulation that carried an R value of about R5 per inch. The way that it insulated, it had a certain type of blowing agent that had hydrofluorocarbons in it, and it would fill little bubbles inside the insulation board that then allowed for it to capture that heat, basically, and inhibit the thermal transfer of heat back and forth. But the problem is, over time, that gas inside the actual bubbles of insulation would release, and its efficacy, or what's called thermal drift, would diminish pretty substantially over time. And with that, you have to consider that. But at the same time, what was inside those bubbles happened to be something that was not global warming friendly in this situation. So that's why they've moved away from that. We mentioned last week that as of the 1st of January 2021, Vermont was one of the five states, I believe, maybe six, that were actually banning that type of insulation to be used. However, DuPont and also Dow have come up with new formulations of the same product that will be global warming friendly and have HFOs or hydrofluoroolefins inside. And so that will be something that you can still go ahead and pick up at your local lumberyard and use that in different applications. Right now, we do have Steve Spatz from Efficiency Vermont joining us once again. I will only say this, Steve, that technology is great until it's not, and so we've had a few sound difficulties. So if we just stop talking, it's not because we fell asleep. It's more so because you can hear us, but we can't hear you. But Steve, this week, go ahead and welcome once again to our show.
Hi, guys.
How's it going?
Good to hear you.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, you can hear us for now.
So yeah. we were wondering, the Home Performance Energy Star program, which is part of the EEN network program and the Efficiency Vermont programs. I know that the Energy Star program for other types of, like the high performance tier, require the insulation be installed with a solid barrier on all six sides. Is that something that's brought through on the Home Performance Energy Star?
Well, it's basically just one of the tenets of proper installation and an expectation that if you're using a fibrous insulation, that it's going to be enclosed on all six sides so that it's actually effectively doing its job and not suspect to air movement and convective heat loss. So that is something that's just a part of the standard practice for installation for any sort of fibrous insulation.
But in keeping with that, one thing that's I think really important is the ARBES code, the Residential Building Energy Standards, also the CBES code, Commercial Building Energy Standard, is requiring that, well, it's more favorable towards continuous insulation. As the ARBES ramped up this past year in September of 2020, it was requiring that there be a larger component of the continuous insulation. Could you just speak to that? Because I know some people think, geez, I've got R19 or R23 or R30 printed on my insulation, so no matter where I install it or how I install it, I should be getting that type of performance.
Right.
With that, could you speak to that a little bit, Steve, and just say, you know, I mean, really, what are the losses that you see when you put inside of a framing cavity?
Yeah, well, that's it. It's a misnomer, you know, to think that you've got in an R19 bat or an R21 fiberglass or rock wool bat that you put into a 2x6 wall that you have a R19 or an R21 wall. That insulation is only resisting heat flow in between the framing members of that wall assembly. And each of those pieces of framing lumber, each of those studs, every 16 or 24 inches on center, is doing a pretty effective job of actually conducting heat energy still. So when there are standard practices for evaluating overall resistance to heat flow in an assembly, whether it's a wall or a roof, where you're actually taking into account the effectiveness of the insulation that's in the cavity, along with what else is happening in that wall or roof assembly, how much heat energy is going through other components in that wall, namely mostly being framing. So when you look at effective R values, you're taking all those things into account, and you end up with a much lower overall assembly, what we call it, assembly R value when you're just using those cavity insulations. So,
right.
Energy,
so in the efficiency smart programs, and more importantly with the Arby's, when Arby's is asking you to create an R25 assembly with a 2x4 wall and then 2 or 3 inches of ridge on the outside, that does not include frame losses. These are all kind of, you know,
prescriptive values.
Yeah, prescriptive values that are not taking mm-hmm. the framing into account. So when somebody's looking for that for their own house, and that mm-hmm. it says R23 on the package, they're allowed to count that as R23 framed insulation.
Sure.
Okay. Just want to make sure that's clear.
Yeah, and then you're just looking at when you see some of the things that are in the code book now, where you'll see like R20 plus 6 or R20 plus 5 or R20 plus 12. What that means is that R20 is what you're going to put into the cavity, into the stud bay. And then the R5, the R6, the R12, those would be considered continuous insulation values. So that means that you're putting, you know, either most commonly it's a layer of some sort of sheet good, whether that sheet good is a different type of foam or a wood fiber or a mineral wool board.
Right.
It's usually put over the wall as a continuous layer. So, I mean, it's just, you know, one big cozy blanket wrapped around the building, either on the inside or the outside, most commonly on the outside, so.
It allows us to get to that Shangri-La of building science, the contiguous exterior mm-hmm. insulation.
But one thing that's brought up, Steve, is kind of interesting, and we've experienced this when we get into some of the more robust assemblies, is the thicker you get with the insulation on the outside, which, you know, the Building Science Corp will now say the perfect wall is to put as much insulation, if not all of it, on the outside of the wall and leave the internal cavity of framing for your service bay and fill it with insulation if you want. I get that. But when we had an assembly we built last year with Hayward Design Build at the South Hero Library, we came into this real big situation where, we put more robust insulation on the outside, but then the fasteners that you use to actually attach the mm-hmm. cladding or siding to it, there weren't guns that were made yet that could shoot a long enough fastener. Then you had to go through an engineering review to make sure that those fasteners were adequate enough to support the weight of the siding. Yeah. And so when you're building these assemblies, yes, we're trying to make something more robust, something durable, but all components of it need to be durable. I'm all for, increasing that R value and everything else, but at the same time, to make sure that your siding's going to stay on the wall and it's not going to sag over time. So that's another consideration as we're evolving here that we've run into.
Yep. It's an assembly, so all the parts need to behave together, you know, and be, you know, thought of. That's the other thing, you know, assemble things on the fly without considering how those different components are going to work together ahead of time is problematic. That's where you can end up with some compromises that you may not be comfortable with, but because they weren't thought out ahead of time, you kind of have to work with it. So, there's different considerations. It's not, you know, putting layers and thick layers of continuous insulation board on the outside of the building isn't the only way to get that continuous effect. You're basically trying to just create a disconnect from the inside of the house to the outside, and separating two walls, double stud wall assemblies can be another way of accomplishing that. Doing other mechanisms to the inside of the building are other ways to accomplish the same end goal. So,
sure,
a lot of options out there.
Well, Steve, once again, we thank you for joining us this week. It's always helpful, and we'll look forward to next week as well. We're hoping to get through insulation today, but it's a big topic, but definitely we'll look forward to having you back next week. But thank you for joining us again today.
And, of course, efficiencyvermont.com if you want information.
Hey, there you go. You're getting it.
Yeah, exactly. Throw the information out there.
Yep, we'll go to efficiencyvermont.com, and you can find lots of resources, more information about insulation in and on your home.
Great.
Great.
Excellent.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much, Steve. Have a good rest of your weekend.
You know, Steve did say one word that I know some people in Vermont aren't used to. It was the C word, code. You know, because he said you have to follow code. And so as a DIY person out there, or even a home owner that's looking to hire a contractor to do something, make sure you're just asking about that. I mean, the code publications are out there through the Public Service Board. You can find one digitally on their website, the Public Service Board website. Look for the RBs, or Residential Building Energy Standards.
Yeah, if you type in RBES to a search, and sometimes RBES space VT, that'll bring you right to the page with the PDF.
Or you can contact one of the friendly customer service people at Efficiency Vermont, and I'm sure they'd be happy to mail one out to you. You know, you want to make sure you're aware of what's going on and you're asking the right questions, because even if you say, I want to go ahead and have an assembly built to less than that standard, when you go to sell the house, you're going to face it again, or the builder is not really legally allowed to build you something that's less than those standards, because they will be liable for that, even if you give them the approval, because you cannot sign your legal rights away to meeting the code in this situation.
And just remember, code is the minimum that you can do. It's like getting a D on your test.
So I still passed, though, Chris.
Still passed, and it's still a good assembly, and it'll still move forward, but with a little more effort, a little more knowledge about how to move forward with building assemblies, you can go to a higher R value, especially when we're talking about what I talked about last week. I use a lot of used insulation.
Yeah.
And that can bring your price down to, you know, 30% of what, you know, brand new insulation will cost. It keeps this insulation out of the waste stream, and you get that R value on your walls.
Yeah, as long as you get the insulation that has not been, like if it's a roof assembly where you had polyiso cyanurate or polyiso on top of the roof deck, you want to make sure that it had not been saturated with water or exposed to inordinate heat or UV exposure, and then it can still be repurposed, like Chris says, and it performs excellently at that point.
So let's talk about rigid again. We were starting about rigid. There are basically three types of rigid insulation. There's a fourth type that's just recently come out with a very high R value, a phenolic type. But the basic types are EPS, XPS, and polyiso.
Yep.
So XPS is that blue board. We talked about that last week and a little before.
It'll now be gray.
It'll be gray. Was blue, pink, or green. And that is extruded polystyrene. It's a good insulation, a rigid insulation, but it does have some issues with it as far as the off-gassing, although that will be reduced. And we've talked about the thermal shift, the phase shift in the R value if it's in contact with the ground. We also have EPS. And EPS is something that we've all experienced in the form of styrofoam. It's basically just these little balls of insulation that are then squeezed together. And that's a closed cell type of insulation. And that is about 4 per inch. So you're going to need R4 per inch. So you're going to need a little more of it than you would if you were to use an XPS or a polyiso, but it has some very good aspects to it. First of all,
when it's tested, Chris, you're the one that taught me this. Yeah, when it's tested, all insulation is tested, if people don't know it, at 70 degrees
74.
Fahrenheit. Fahrenheit.
AST
basically
test.
When you don't need the insulation performing well. You know, granted, you want a different extreme, whether it's really hot or really cold, but the nice thing about EPS is when it gets down to 5 degrees Fahrenheit, the R value increases 1 per inch. They just can't market it that way. So, you know, you have, once again, the prescriptive value or the highway mileage, and actually the performance value. And so the performance value of EPS, once you use this product and it gets to the temperatures that we're going to be experiencing outside next week, it's going to perform better. And so that's something to consider.
So I'm a big fan of EPS. If I'm going to do below grade work, I use EPS. I'm a firm believer. But that is also when specifically we have to make sure that we have good drainage. If we're going to put it outside in contact with wet earth, then any of these insulations need a moisture barrier and what's called a dimple mat. It's not necessary, but it's a very good idea. It gives a drainage plane that's empty, so that the water go right down to your perimeter drain and then daylight it away, and that'll keep your insulation dry.
One of the big comparisons between the XPS or the blue board historically that we talked about, which will now be a darker gray, and the EPS, the white material that sometimes comes in a gray now as well, interestingly enough.
With the graphene on it.
Yes, exactly. But you know, with the EPS that Chris was just talking about, it is more able to take on water, but it releases the water once you start to allow it to dry. And so that's why he was saying make sure you have adequate drainage. The problem with XPS. Most people want to put it up against their foundation on the exterior of the wall. And when you have significant hydraulic pressure, like let's say you build your house on the side of a hill, and you've got water coming down that hill, subterranean, and even surface water, it creates pressure against that insulation, and it'll force eventually, even though XPS takes up water more slowly, once it's in there, it flip-flops again. It doesn't release it easily, and it becomes a conductor instead of an insulator, so it's going to work against what you're trying to achieve as far as insulation is concerned. That's why considering the right type of insulation and the right assembly is so important.
So the last type of rigid insulation that we're going to talk about is polyisocyanurate.
Polyiso!
Polyiso. It is a basically a yellowish type of insulation. It can either be unfaced or have a fiberglass facing or have a foil facing, although you can also get XPS and EPS with different applications. Polyiso is well known for having a black fiberglass mat on top of it, which is in of itself vapor open.
Almost like a felt, it feels like.
Yeah, exactly. And polyiso is very good for all applications above grade. I was talking to a builder the other day. He called up asking for some advice, and he was talking about putting polyiso below grade. And I was like, whoa. We never use polyiso below grade. Go with an XPS or an EPS. That's where we want to stay. Polyiso has a higher R value than either of the other two. It's about, you know, between 5.7 and 6.2, depending on the manufacturer. And it does have blowing agents that have a lower global warming potential than the blowing agents of XPS. So that's better. It has a, it is slightly more expensive, but we also have a lot of it in the used form because
yes,
it's used on commercial building for roofs all over the country. So when they start deconstructing these buildings, when these buildings are past their useful time and they start pulling that apart, there's a series of companies that go in and take that and will resell it to you at a, you know, pennies on the dollar.
One thing that's important about all three types of insulations that, that Chris just spoke about is, you know, these are plasticized insulations, and one of the things that's really important about this is none of these, the bad part about it is none of these are biodegradable.
Right.
The good part though is none of these are biodegradable, so they can be repurposed.
Yep.
if they have not been damaged or whatever. So in using these insulations, once again, if you're going to tear assembly apart, if you're going to deconstruct, do it carefully and get this back into the construction stream instead of the waste stream so that it can be repurposed, as he mentioned.
So there's a fourth type of rigid foam I was just mentioning called phenolic insulation. This is using a benyl phenol as the actual insulation, and it's a black insulation. And it has a remarkable R value of 8 per inch.
Yeah.
However, it's very expensive. I've seen a couple of projects that used it, but it only used it because it was the height of a building had to be lowered because of legal requirements. So instead of going with the polyiso, they were able to get another 4 or 5 inches out of it with the same R value using this. Cooltherm is one of the companies that makes this phenolic insulation. So this is a new part of the insulation world and the rigid insulation world. But there's one more that we have to go over before we go into the weird ones, because there are a couple of really fun weird ones.
Alternative ones, Chris.
okay. And that is spray foam. And we put spray foam down. Spray foam is not a rigid insulation until it's been applied. It is something that we use on uneven surfaces because it fills gaps really well. We like to use it on, for instance,
a stone foundation
yeah, that has been properly pointed and does not have moisture
coming
through.
Wait a second. Those cobwebs, the dirt, the falling apart, mortar.
Just spray it right on.
Yeah,
there.
Sure. Nothing will happen there.
No, you're going to maintain all of your R values. So spray foam, depending on the type of spray foam, there are two types. There's open cell and closed cell. Open cell has a lower R value. Closed cell's got a higher R value. All of these are manufactured on site,
yep,
which means that if the person doesn't know what they're doing, you can get a bad mix. And, thus,
and it'll never be right.
And it'll never be right.
Yeah.
We have Don in Elmore calling, so we're going to go to him and we'll get back to spray foam in just a minute. Don, how can we help you?
Good morning, fellas. Hello?
Hello, yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Given what you've been saying about the various styrofoam style insulations, plastic insulations, and I've wondered about that too with their absorption of water and releasing it so slowly that you got problems. But what is the foam type of material I see that is often being put on the outside of poured concrete basements today, and is that really going to gain you anything given the moisture it's going to pick up from the ground? So that's what I've wondered whenever I see that.
So with that, what you're looking at mainly is going to be a blue board or a pink board or the XPS ones again, and that's primarily what people like to use. And current code stipulates that you're going to need to use at least 3 inches of that product to get it out there. And that one, that type of insulation is susceptible to UV damage over time, weed whacker damage, of course.
Physical damage.
Yep, and also water absorption. So you got to be really careful. Now, granted, if you've got a nice environment where it's a real sandy soil and everything else, or you've done something to maybe a curtain drain around the house if it's on the hillside to pull water away, then that can still perform well. The problem is if you don't protect it, if you don't put some kind of covering over it, like a cementous base parge coating or maybe a metal coating, there's other variants over that insulation, it is susceptible to degrading and damage. And if you've got a really wet environment, it can over time start to draw that water in and not release it easily. So that, once again, as you're building a house or you're doing some type of an addition or DIY project, you got to give consideration to these things and not just count it good just because it's on the building, but if it's not going to be durable and perform, that's going to be a problem.
And that's my point. But when it's used below grade,
yep,
does it make any difference if it's covered with a plastic sheet of some kind?
It does.
That's just not going to help either.
No, it does. It actually, what it does is it will decrease the amount of static pressure, the water that's in the ground is pushing against it and forcing water into the actual material. So what we recommend is if you're going to have exterior insulation, one of the points I wanted to bring up is if you have a concrete, poured concrete wall, why not put the insulation inside? I mean, I like insulation outside, but
sure,
you've got to do it.
Thanks. That was going to be my next question.
Yeah.
It sounds
yeah,
like it makes more sense any way you look at it.
There are a lot of... Yeah, so a classic treatment for a basement wall is damp proofing. It's kind of a tar that they spray on the outside, which doesn't stop moisture moving through the wall, but does reduce it. And then on the inside, you can add a layer of an insulation that has a vapor barrier on it or a sheet good of plastic, and then your rigid insulation, and then if you wanted to, you could frame in front of that. We do have a video on the website, the YouTube video. If you go to House Calls Vermont YouTube, under instructional videos, we have a description of exactly how to do a crawl space and when we're using an interior insulation. So I've had people ask for both. I've had people apply both. They're both okay as long as if you're putting the insulation on the outside that you really listen to our advice and have really well-draining soils, have that dimple mat, then with a layer of some kind of plastic coating to protect the insulation, and that all has to go down to a really well-designed perimeter drain that daylights.
And Don, to be fair about this too, is there other products that you can use on the exterior? Because I know there's like the ICF foundations, which basically are the Lego blocks for adults, is the way I put it. And then it's basically going to be an EPS assembly that you stack, and they look like big Lego blocks, and they have standoffs and supports inside of them, and you pour those full of concrete. The exterior of that, you don't want to leave exposed. You want to put some kind of robust weatherproofing or bitumen-based or tar-based type product on there. But some of these are more robust than others, because you can get the basic entry level of tar sprayed applied, or you can go a few tiers up from that.
Like a Seiko or something. High performing.
Exactly. And that's going to give you longevity and durability. So there are ways to treat it appropriately, but just leaving it alone and not treating it at all and calling it good, you're definitely expecting some type of failure down the road.
Yeah, that's kind of what I wanted, and I appreciate what you said about it. That's good knowledge I have.
Excellent,
thank
sir.
You both very much.
You're very welcome. Have a great
Thanks
day.
For calling. So we were on a spray foam.
Oh, one thing you mentioned right before we took the call that I thought was interesting is you'll notice if you have spray foam applied, it does have some smell initially when it goes on, but long term, if one of the indicators that it didn't mix right is the fact that you get this fish smell that's continuous, and that's basically is that the two components didn't mix right, and I got to tell you, if they didn't mix right out of the can, it doesn't get better. Yep. And that becomes a really big thing. So you got to be careful about that, because that's when some of the sensitivities that people have to the foam will come into play. So basically, you want to make sure you've got a company that is certified, qualified, experienced in this, and that looks at your current conditions, not just at the outside temperature, because if you're trying to install this at 40 degrees or below, it's not going to cure right. So you also want to make sure that the moisture content of the cavity of framing the that you're spraying it into, or the actual stone foundation that you're spraying it into, is going to be dry, it's going to have the right moisture content, and it's going to be clean. It's not going to have a bunch of debris. Sure, you can spray foam over dirt, and it's going to cover it, but is it going to adhere, and is it going to perform long-term for you? That's what you got to keep in mind.
So the question that comes to mind right after that is, where should I use spray foam and where shouldn't I use spray foam? So spray foam has got some real downsides. The blowing agents in spray foam are pretty bad. It's got a pretty high global warming potential.
But they got better with the HFOs.
They are getting better. They're not as good as a rigid insulation that's made out of pressed wood, like what people remember Homasote. Well, there's some insulations that are coming out that'll get in. When we get into alternative insulations, we'll be talking about Gutex. That's a pressed wood material, which should never be used below grade, but is very good above grade. Where do we use spray foam? Well, we try to limit our use of spray foam as much as possible. We have some builder friends of ours who are like, well, you know, we built this house and we spray foamed every cavity, and we're like cringing a bit. Not that that's necessarily a bad idea, but we have been in a lot of projects where, after the fact, where the foam separates from the framing members and leaves gaps. And if all you have between the outside and the inside is that spray foam between some framing, that can cause some durability issues. You can get convective loops in there, you can get moisture in there, that can be a problem.
And to be fair about this, you know, I have...
I don't like being fair. Jim's the fair one.
When I did an addition onto my house and doubled the square footage, on one side of it, I did all foam. Because back in the day, that's what they were saying was the best way to go. Now, because I'm a contractor and I have a long-suffering wife, I was able to take a really long time completing this addition. So I had everything framed up, and it sat. And it sat, but it dried. And all the excess moisture content left the building. Then the spray foam was applied, and then it sat. And it sat. And it sat, and thus I could actually observe the spray foam to make sure there were no separation points. And then after that, we sheetrocked and finished and everything else. So that turned out really well. But not every building, of course, has that type of advantage of allowing you to observe the way that I did. So once again, you want to make sure somebody's qualified. They're doing moisture content readings. They're observing the temperatures out there, and that they've been doing this for a while, and not just buying a new spray rig and saying, "Hey, I can spray foam too," and then possibly introducing problems, because fixing it becomes really challenging. But when you do start to apply it, make sure it's going to go in the right area. And if you do want to, you know, spray foam your entire house that way, you certainly can. Just observe these conditions and know that there are also other options that you consider.
Talk to us about the options first, if it'll possible.
Exactly.
We're talking right now about spray foam, and we just wanted to clarify and finish up the list of where we use it. So we're real big fans of using spray foam in the perimeter joist bay in a basement, as long as you don't have a perimeter beam. Right, some of these houses are built on
like an old one, like an older housing stock.
Yeah, older house, 1800s farmhouse. If you go downstairs, you're not going to have a 2x10 or a 2x12 as your outside perimeter joist. You're going to have an 8x8 beam, and if you spray foam against that. Closed cell spray foam is a vapor retarder, so you're going to trap any moisture that is between the insulation and that beam, and it's not going to be able to dry out.
So fast forward here. So basically, you know, you have a four-sided beam. You know, when you're looking at this, it can dry above, it can dry below, it can dry outside or dry inside most of the time. But let's say you've got a wet condition to where the stone of the foundation is drawing up some moisture, and so it's keeping the bottom part of that from drying. And then you've got maybe compromised siding on an 1800s house, and so water's getting there and it's not able to dry. So one of the bigger drying planes has either been up into the wall system or into the basement.
Yep.
And all of a sudden you cut off that excessive or that extra drying plane, and then all of a sudden that moisture content goes up in that beam and it accelerates rot. It doesn't happen every time, but the potential is certainly there. You've got to observe that.
Yep. So stone foundations, with the caveat that we don't have weeping and it's not full of dust. Box sills, like we were just talking, perimeter joist bays. Sometimes when we're in an attic that has a knee wall, we'll also use it on the perimeter joist beam there in order to stop the air from coming in and insulating that.
And in the attic, like you just mentioned, let's say you have an older house, once again. Top plates of framing are good, but also let's say you have plaster lath.
Yep.
So you've got all these uneven surfaces, or you've got a ceiling on top of a ceiling, or who knows what they've done over over the last 100 plus years. And so you're trying to get a continuous plane there of air sealing because it's the only really effective way to do it. So I've seen basically a 1 to 2 inches of spray foam coating over the entire top of the attic in one of those situations.
And the biggest thing with spray foam is if you can walk into the space with a spray foam and it's more than a foot tall, you have to have it covered with an ignition barrier. And there are two ways to do that. One is something called intumescent paint, which is a paint that gets sprayed on top, which stops it, which reduces the flammability. And the other is to build a frame wall in front of that, and with that frame wall to put some sheetrock on, and that also acts as an ignition barrier.
Hey, Chris, you had this. You made this comment about these crazy other insulation
Yay,
types.
Yay, crazy insulation.
Yeah, just because you put the herd of sheep inside your walls, they make a little bit of noise, but the wool is insulative. So go ahead.
So some really well-known alternative insulations are sheep's wool.
Yep.
Torn-up cotton blue jeans.
Hey, put yours in there.
Cork. Imagine that.
He had to drink a lot of wine, though, to fill up that cavity, but it could be a good excuse. You're trying to promote efficiency.
There's something called a vacuum-insulated panel, which is kind of like the old coffee packs where they suck all the air out, and that is incredibly insulative, but is also dangerous because if you get a pinprick in it, the whole thing
is put a nail through it to hold it in place, and or hang a picture, and then all of a sudden you lose the insulation value.
We have Kevin in Groton. We're going to go to in Groton. Kevin in Groton, how can we help you?
Hello, how are you?
We're doing well, sir.
Good. It's actually the first time hearing your show. I thought I was going to miss it. I'm glad I got in on this part of the insulation.
Excellent.
We have a camp on Lake Groton, and it has a porch on it that currently is all like what I call triple track storm windows.
Yes.
And we want to replace those and put regular thermal pane windows in. We want to kind of stretch out the use we can get out of the porch, you know, probably not in the dead of winter, but if we can, you know, stretch it from April to end of November.
Yeah, sure.
Three and a half seasons.
Yeah.
Three and a half season, yes. there is some, so the floor of it is actually outside. It's not like in the basement. There currently is some blue board under there, I think about 2 inches, but everything else, like a knee wall, well, that's about a 30-inch wall below the windows and the whole ceiling, there's no insulation whatsoever. So the ceiling has 3-inch rafters in it, old-style rafters, 2x3s, and then it's just the boards for the roofing and then the steel roof above it. Mm-hmm. So what would be the best to put on the ceiling on that for insulation?
Well, one of the things for the steel roof, you got to be really careful there, too, because sometimes people try to put a fibrous material, once again, against roofing, especially if you have some condensation movement or, you know, vapor diffusion up into that assembly. And what will happen is it'll condense on that metal surface and drip back down into the insulation, getting it wet, turning into a conductor. You got a failed assembly. So you got to be really careful there.
It'll do that even if the boards are there. It'll drip down through that.
It can, yes, definitely, because if you don't have a great air seal there, you know, you're going to have that problem. A venting channel, exactly. Yep. So you've got to make sure, once again, the assembly is robust and can perform, no matter what type of insulation you use. In that situation, sometimes with the metal roof, if you're going to spray right up against it, you may want to just go with, you know, a foam type of insulation there, but I'd like to see an air channel every time. I want to see, like, take your framing pieces, your rafters, put like an inch to an inch and a half tall cleat on either side of one, then put a piece of Luon or even rigid board insulation on top of those on the underside of that cleat. So then you get a default air channel there that vents from the soffit up into maybe the wall, because there is a through wall vent that you can, if this roof terminates
now
against the wall. Go ahead.
No, this roof just goes right up against the camp, so
well, that's what I mean. Yeah, exactly.
It wouldn't. It can't vent anywhere up through a soffit.
Well, if you look up CoreVent, CoreVent has a through wall vent or sidewall vent to where when the roof does dead end onto the actual vertical wall, you can put a vent in there to allow for the venting. But you want to make sure your pitch is not 412 or less, because if it is, it could back up water. But if it's a little more aggressive than that, like a 512 or a 612, you're going to be fine. But with that, whatever you put up there, make sure you have some type of breathing space. place, like we mentioned, and then into the cavities. You know, you could use like a rock wool. You could use something like that. You could also, on the underside of that, put rock wool in that you can buy at one of your lumber yards, that some of the sponsors here. And then you can also put rigid board underneath that and then put your ceiling. Whatever you do for a ceiling, though, a lot of times people want to put a wood ceiling there, and they don't put an air barrier in place. And thus, things can escape. So you can put an air barrier in there with OSB that's taped. You could put an air barrier with some type of a membrane that's taped and sealed. And then that's going to keep that excessive moisture from getting up into that assembly, and it's going to perform really well. As far as the walls are concerned, once again, if you're going to do this yourself, I think the Roxul or Rockwool type insulation works really, really well. It's very forgiving. If you're going to do a DIY project, we would like to see some continuous insulation on the inside of those studs too, or the outside preferably, but if they're siding there already, you don't necessarily want to get into that. But on the floor, that becomes a real important assembly too, because you have it 2 inches there, which is an R10. Really code once you see at least an R30, but just for your performance and your comfortability and longevity of being able to use this longer into the season, you want to get a better assembly. So sometimes putting that rock wool insulation into the cavities of the framing cavities, get your rigid board underneath that, and then make sure you have something that's going to protect it from, you know, damage, rodents, whatever, and then you get that underneath there too, like a plywood.
Like a piece of PT.
Exactly.
So as far as the floor, the rafters, the joist down below,
yes.
You put the rock wool up first and then a rigid insulation to the bottom of the floor joist?
And that provides you that thermal break, and you might even be able to repurpose that same blue board that you're going to take down if you take it down carefully, and then that can suffice, and then put a PT plywood underneath that's going to be durable. It's going to seal the edges really well, thinking air seal once again, and all the joints and seams, and you're going to have a really nice assembly. It's going to be comfortable to the feet as well as you walk across it.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
You're
very
welcome.
All that, and I'm glad I got to talk to you.
Same here, sir. Have a great day.
Thank you.
And with that, we are 2 minutes from the end of the show.
One quick thing, though, about rodents and pest and vermin and everything else. What we're seeing with some of the rigid board insulation that's going on to the outside walls, what we're seeing along the basement areas is that it's creating this warm space where carpenter ants and other vermin and termites actually are making it further north because they can be protected from the cold, and some of our temperatures are warming too at the same time. So you got to be careful there too. So you got to inspect as well. Don't just put the assembly there and call it good. If you start to see little fragments of the insulation on the ground, you wonder why. Or if you see little perforations or holes in the edges, once again, that could be indicative that there's something else there. So be careful of that too. But Chris, go right ahead.
So I just wanted to point out, we've been talking for the past month about the indoor air quality survey that we want to do, and I've gotten a list of something like 15 of
excellent.
You listeners who
That's
are interested.
Great.
And this week, the second indoor air quality monitor arrived. So I'm going to be sending out an email to everyone who has signed up, and we're going to start getting this indoor air quality monitor out to you, and we'll have you, we'll make sure that there's a log paper that comes with it, so you can log where in the house it was and whether the doors were open or closed for that room. We'll tell you the conditions we want, and then we'll go through the next 8 or 15 weeks, and hopefully by the spring, when we get up to the spring, we'll have some results and we can share those with you.
Well, the question is, Chris, what's the reward? I mean, if you're the best house, you get the comfort of knowing bragging rights. But what if you're the worst house?
If you have the worst house, then we offer you advice on how to make it better.
Like, run.
Well, thank you guys so much for taking your time on this Saturday, this, you know, drizzly, rainy, snowy Saturday to spend with us. We'll be back next week where we will take the last paragraph of insulation, but we'll also be talking about super insulated houses, the Passive House Standard, the High Performance Tier Program from Efficiency Vermont, and other things. And that's when we want to hear you all come in and ask questions about that type of.
But let me ask or answer one question before you ask it. Is basically passive house is not passive solar that you knew about back in the 70s.
Nope.
This is something different, and it's going to be really entertaining and interesting for those people who really like this high efficiency homes. But we definitely want you to be able to take advantage of that knowledge too. Oh, but we do have one call that was in earlier.
Brian,
you're back, and yet we can hear you. That's great. No technical difficulties, and we have a few minutes, so go right ahead, sir, with your question.
Brian?
What? I guess I was wrong. There are technical
Brian,
difficulties.
Brian, you there?
Are you there, Brian?
You can hear me.
You're there now. Sorry about that, Brian. Go right ahead with your question, sir.
Okay, real quick. First, thanks for having a good show. Important.
Thank you.
Brian from Woodbury. this is the thing. It was really good synchronicity, exactly everything you described about the blow-in cellulose. I've done it in my little timber frame I built for the walls. I rented the machine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, besides, give me your best opinion, expert, on besides just stuffing more cellulose, is there a better way to fill and before I seal it up?
Well,
and some of them are sealed, and then, so it's a big, it's a mess, kind of.
Sorry to hear that, first of all. But go ahead, Jim.
Well, what I was going to say is, you know, once again, we're on radio. You can't see us. We can't see your house. But with that in mind, in the assembly, if it's a frame cavity, timber frame, I get.
Yeah.
And you have a.
No, I'm just describing it.
Yeah.
And so with that, if you've got cladding on the outside or sheathing, and you've got sheetrock in the inside, you have a traditional cavity. So with that, if it basically has cellulose inside that then has settled, and you don't just have like a tongue and groove or some type of cladding on the inside that has air leakage possibilities, if you don't have that.
No, it's rock on the inside and
perfect.
Cedar local clabbered.
So one thing that could be done, provided that the sheetrock was adhered appropriately, you know, with enough fasteners, what would be important is to, you can go back and dense pack it again, or touch up, as they call it. So what you can do is have a professional company come in and actually make a few penetrations in the sheetrock at each cavity, sometimes above and below, at the high point and the low point, to allow for air to escape while they're filling it. And they can go in and leave the existing cellulose that's there and add to it appropriately so that you stop the settling component and you have a complete assembly once you're done.
But it's not gonna settle in a bad way, because this is like talking 13-15 years of settling.
No, understood. And so basically you have a good base to start with, and that's why it's important.
Yeah.
You know, let's say it settled and it did get moisture and it did cake over a little bit at the top layer. That's why you want to put a hole lower and a hole higher up on that actual cavity, or in each cavity, so that you can actually fluff back up, because, you know, you're going to be pressurizing that space and it's going to then be adding more cellulose. So you can certainly add to what's there, provided that what you installed previously was just your traditional cellulose.
Yeah, and I would also add that it would be a good moment before you get that done to make a couple of test holes in the north, east, south, and west wall, and test the moisture content of that cellulose.
Yeah, get a hole saw and get about like a 2-inch hole, because that's what they're going to use anyway for their line. And just make a few test holes, like Chris said, and then do some inspection. You know, what you don't expect, inspect. And so inspect what's there, find out what's there, so you're better, more knowledgeable in what's going on.
That's what I've actually done, is I've opened it up and I'm inspecting it. I did a vapor barrier. It's not, the problem is not condensation. It's the settling. And is there's some cool tool that you guys were talking about that would tell me, like you were saying, like a stereo thing, like would tell me which is how much it is settled, or...
It looks like an old
equalizer.
Yeah, because when you look at the entire wall assembly, let's say you have 20 cavities, and some of them settle at different levels. So he's saying it kind of looks like an equalizer when you look at it through an infrared camera, and then what it does is it shows the different levels, because nothing settles perfectly.
Yeah.
And so that's something that, you know, granted, most of your insulation companies that are out there should have one of these infrared cameras. You can get really good ones.
Thank you, but I'm doing this myself.
Okay.
I built my own timber frame.
How are you going to dense pack it yourself?
That's what my question is. But can't I just do it by hand?
No, sir.
Just at the top.
No, there's a standard that you have to follow. It's basically like about 3.5 pounds to 4.1 pounds per cubic foot of density, and that is achieved by a pressurized machine and not something that a loose fill machine hand packing.
I have heard, and I will just throw this out there. There was a person that I spoke to, not in Vermont, who actually had the walls were big enough that he put a piece of wood down on top of the cellulose and jumped on it. Okay, but
I can reach my arm in.
Okay.
We would
recommend, and this is one of those moments, like with the spray foam, where we would recommend a professional getting involved and getting you dense pack.
And what I would do
I agree with the spray foam.
Yeah.
Well, not with cellulose.
Okay.
Look.
I mean, I'm going to do it myself.
Okay.
Okay.
Because I'm in that position.
Sure.
You know
what I'd like?
I'm asking.
Brian, what I'd like to do is I'd like to, since we're running over, I'd like for you to send me...
I appreciate it.
Yeah, send me an email, and I'd like to get some... I'd like you to take some pictures of all the assemblies that you've been talking about, and we can move forward with some offline advice.
I was just thinking that, and so I'll send the email and some pics, and that would be great. So what the... Could you tell me again?
Sure. It's housecallsvt@gmail.com.
Housecallsvt?
Yeah, VT as in Vermont. At
just
gmail.com.
Just a V and a T.
Just a V and a T.
Right. And then what?
At gmail.com.
Gmail. Okay, me too. All right. Hey, what was your name?
I'm Chris, and that's Jim, and we appreciate your tenacity with all the technical problems you've been having.
Yeah, because I was in the middle of going into a shop, but then I caught you. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. You have a good rest of your weekend.
Well, with that, Chris, you're Chris West. I'm Jim Bradley.
You're Jim Bradley.
Exactly. And we're House Calls Vermont. We thank you for joining us this week, and we look forward to being back here next week.
Don't forget to check out our YouTube channel. If you want to go on to a Google search and type in House Calls Vermont and YouTube, and it should bring it up. We've got lots of instructionals. We've got old shows up there, and you can look at those. There's lots of graphics that I've added in order to illustrate some of the concepts we've been talking about. So take a look at those, and until next week, this is Chris West,
Jim Bradley with House Calls Vermont. Enjoy your weekend.
House Calls Vermont, brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive in Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com. RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. Sticks and Stuff in Swanton Lumber with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find where at curtislumber.com. By Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basement-y. NorthernNEFoundations.com. And Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association, homebuildersvt.com. Poly Construction in South Burlington, one call does it all. Online at polyconstruction.com. Join us again next Saturday at 12:30 for House Calls Vermont.